and was, and you see her in the film walking along Hollywood Boulevard, looking at all these stars on the Walk of Fame, and making sometimes very unkind comments about some of those people from that era that she knew,
right?
Whom she knew, and it's not that she's being vulgar; it's just simply. And then it will cut to her very adult daughter talking about her, saying, "Yeah, well, you know, essentially, going, who did she think she was?" And she would say these things about people, and therefore, the work was certainly not coming her way for those reasons, among others. But it's fascinating to see, because she, even in her.
USA Radio News.
Today, outside the White House, the president stood and took questions from the press for, gosh, almost an hour. Now, what we heard from the president was he reacted to the IG report that came out yesterday, and the president was also again asked about his firing of former FBI Director James Comey.
It was criminal. What he did was a terrible thing to the people. What he did was so bad in terms of our Constitution, in terms of the well-being of our country. What he did was horrible. Should he be locked up? Let somebody make a determination. Look at all the dishonest things that crooked Hillary did. Look at what's gone on.
That audio courtesy of Fox News, and one Kansas City, Kansas sheriff's deputy was killed and another was in critical condition after a shooting near a courthouse today. The incident occurred while two Wyandotte County sheriff's deputies were both overcome by an inmate that was being transferred from the jail to the courthouse. The inmate was shot and is also in critical condition. This is USA Radio News.
GEICO presents eyewitness interviews with inanimate objects.
This is Brian Bruno live on the scene of a recent robbery. Here to describe the event, a recliner.
So, I'm taking my afternoon nap when suddenly I hear a commotion. As I look up, two dudes wearing ski masks run out the door with a flat-screen TV.
Did you chase after them?
I can't run with claw feet.
Your recliner can't help in a robbery, but the GEICO Insurance Agency can help you get covered for personal property loss. Go to geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutterton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, good afternoon. Ooh, this is sounds a little strange. Hi, I'm Pat Smits. It's Friday afternoon, June 15th. Can you believe? Halfway through June already. Certainly the weather now is looking like summer weather, and beautiful day today. I'm looking at the weather report, and I'm about to stop giving a weather report because today it was supposed to be overcast and 79 degrees, and this is supposed to be current conditions at the Somerset Airport. Now, I came from Round Valley area, and it was beautiful, sunny, certainly not overcast, and it seemed warmer than 79 degrees, but it was a beautiful day. So let's at least tell you what the weather prediction is for tomorrow and the weekend. Actually, tonight, mostly clear, and then there's some patchy fog, Starts out patchy fog in the morning and then sunny. So should be a beautiful day, 84 degrees or near that tomorrow. And then on Sunday, again, mostly sunny, high near 90. Slight chance of showers or thunderstorms, actually, on Sunday night because of the warm weather. And then into Monday, mostly sunny, and then a very slight chance of thunderstorms. And getting into the rest of the week, it's, you know, who knows, so I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm just hoping that we have a nice week because a lot of the schools are graduating and people want to have graduations outside. So, in fact, you know, they can have more people attend. I will say I know there's a graduation in Hopewell High School on Wednesday, and there is a chance of showers during the day. Then it should be partly sunny, high near about 84 degrees, and then on Wednesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms. But looks like maybe very nice in the afternoon. Hopefully it will be. So let's take a very short break, bring you some spots, and then I'll be back with It's the Law.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, as I said, I'm Pat Smits. Friday afternoon, it's a program, It's the Law. And when I don't have guests, and I haven't had guests recently, just talk about what's been happening. Decisions approved for publication, meaning these are decisions by the Supreme Court of New Jersey, or by the Appellate Division, and once in a while by the trial court. But also the let's talk about the judiciary and view one of the things that there's a great article by our own Peter Veniero in the New Jersey Lawyer, the June edition, and he's talking about effective advocacy before the New Jersey Supreme Court. I would say that most of the attorneys in New Jersey, myself included, have never appeared before the New Jersey Supreme Court. They usually, well, they take very few cases. So most of us, although we've been in the appellate division, or many attorneys have not even appeared in the appellate division. I've certainly argued cases a number of times in the appellate division. Had hoped at one time that the Supreme Court would take up a case, and I think they should have, but they didn't. And the chances of them taking up a case, of course, is, you know, very, very, slim, obviously, unless it's a constitutional issue or some other very important issue. Every once in a while, they take up something in family law, and they did the most recent case with big change in the law was the case where they changed totally changed and used best interests in their analysis as to if a parent should be entitled to move a child out of state. So that was a significant change. On the other hand, you have judges who have their own views, and if there's a judge who, for example, thinks, oh, well, girls go with moms, then, you know, it's going to be a very tough case if the mother wants to move out of New Jersey. So the judicial administration in New Jersey has really changed, and in some ways we have the, best judicial administration. One of the things that we do, of course, in New Jersey is we do not elect judges. And believe me, I am really a proponent of appointed judiciary. And I've talked to too many, and in fact been in too many other states where the judges are elected. And guess who are the people who generally are contributing to their campaigns? Of course, it's lawyers. So there's also an excellent article in the same New Jersey Lawyer by Judge Stern. And actually, Judge Stern, excellent jurist. He was a Superior Court judge beginning in December of 1981, then assigned to the Appellate Division from 1985 through 2010. And then temporarily, during that time, he was assigned temporarily to the Supreme Court from 2010 until his mandatory retirement age on June 10th, 2011. That's one thing that many people don't understand. In New Jersey, judges are required to retire at age 70, which so many of them should continue serving. Some should obviously retire. Some should have retired long before that age. But in any event, Judge Stern was a just incredible, bright, just accessible, you know, great jurist. And then he also served as a presiding judge for the administration of the Appellate Division from 2004 until his retirement. And, of course, now, like so many retired judges, he's of counsel with a law firm, and he's with Gibbons in Newark. And then he also, before he was a judge, he served as a director of criminal practice and assistant director of legal services in the administrative office of the courts. So he was extremely familiar with the administration and what we call the AOC. So what else, if people are interested in depth, I think I would suggest that article because he is, not only does he write well, but he really can provide all of this information. In fact, any student who's thinking of going to law school should, in fact, read that article to get a sense of what the judiciary is like here in New Jersey, because it is different. Not every court has the levels that we have. The administrative court, of course, is different. But one of the really important things, of course, is judicial independence, and that's becoming of some concern with respect to the number of judges who are being appointed with this administration. Now, in New Jersey, it has not always been, but it's supposed to be an appointment of a Democrat and then an appointment of a Republican so that it stands fairly equal throughout the state. Didn't happen in our county back when Christy Whitman was the governor. In fact, we had three Republican appointments, and some people justified that because we were the majority of voters in Hunterdon County were, in fact, Republican. I think Christy Whitman justified it because there was a somewhat imbalance at the time, and she could point to the fact that there were, I think, slightly more Democrats. So in any event, I'll come back in just a minute and we'll talk more about some of the cases that were decided in the last week.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. We'll be right back. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hi, we're back, and I'm going to talk about some of the cases that were approved for publication. And that's when they're approved for publication, that's when they come out for the attorneys to read and everybody to read. And, of course, they're also unpublished cases, but they're not precedent-setting. So this is a criminal law case, State versus JT, and it was the appellate division, rather long opinion, 61-page opinion. And in this case, the defendant appealed from her conviction for aggravated manslaughter and related offenses. And she was indicted for the murder of her husband, an attempted murder of her minor daughter, and endangering the welfare of her minor son. And this was after she suffocated her husband and then attempted to suffocate her children. The jury acquitted her of murder, but convicted her of the lesser included offense of aggravated manslaughter and other offenses. In other words, when someone is indicted, there are some lesser included offenses. If they're not convicted of murder, which is the charge, they can be convicted of a lesser offense, one of which, of course, is aggravated manslaughter. On appeal, she argued that the jury was tainted by multiple irregularities during the voir dire and trial. Now, the voir dire, of course, is the questioning of potential jurors. And this, traditionally, years ago, it was done by the attorneys. And now it's, done by the judge. The attorneys can submit questions. But in this case, she further argued that the various other errors prejudiced her insanity defense. So what happened here is she obviously pleaded not guilty by reason of an insanity. And she said that there were errors that prejudiced this defense. And the jury found her legally sane during the events at issue. And she's saying that if there had not been errors, she would have been found insane. So the court reversed the defendant's conviction and remanded for a new trial. So this was the appellate division. So based on the record and the arguments, and of course they would have reviewed the entire transcript from the trial, plus the legal briefs, plus argument before the appellate division. So the court ruled that the state, meaning the prosecutor, improperly asked its expert witness to define, quote, legal insanity, and therefore opine on the defendant's state of mind. The appellate court held that when the expert stated that the defendant had, quote, specific intent, end quote, to kill her husband, the expert invaded the exclusive providence of the jury to make that decision. In other words, that's a critical factor, and that was the issue at the trial. So therefore, the appellate division said that it was improper for the expert to determine that she had specific intent, and that, in fact, rendered the subsequent verdict unsustainable. Now, although the appellate division decided to reverse and remand based on improper expert testimony, it further addressed the trial court's ex parte instructions with the prospective juror pool. In other words, what happened here is the court held ex parte interactions with the jury pool, should not have done that. And the appellate division held that prior case law enjoins trial judges from engaging in ex parte interactions with jurors after trial. And that applies with equal force to prospective jurors. So in other words, a judge can't talk to and have ex parte communications or interactions with a jury after the trial, and also can't do it prior to trial to the prospective jurors. And basically, to sustain the fact that there's no place for any ex parte communication by a judge. So in the present case, the court found insufficient evidence to conclude that the court's ex parte communications influenced the ultimate verdict. But the court held that the trial court was obligated to disclose its ex parte communications to the parties, particularly where those communications were inappropriate in light of the gravity of the offense. So that was the other thing. Here it is. This woman has been indicted for murder. She's claiming an insanity defense. And this, because it's such a critical case, such a serious case, if she's found guilty, that makes the prohibitive ex parte communications even worse. So the next case, again, an appellate division case, Bowser versus Board of Trustees for the Police and Firemen's Retirement System. In this case, the petitioner appealed from a board's denial of her application for an accidental disability pension. So on these issues, the board, makes a determination, and then a person can appeal. So petitioner was permanently and totally disabled after slipping and falling on an icy patch in the parking lot of the correctional facility where she worked as a corrections officer. Apparently, she had walked out to her car to retrieve feminine hygiene products while unexpectedly working a second shift. So she had not planned on working a second shift. She ended up going out to her car to get some personal products that she obviously needed. What she had done is she asked another officer to cover for her on the detention floor and did not clock out as she would were she going on a bathroom break. So although the administrative law judge concluded the petitioner was entitled to the pension, the board reversed. And that's what happens in New Jersey. When there's a case before the administrative law judge, once the decision is made, the board, in this case, the board dealing with pensions, have the right to disagree. And that's what happened here. They ruled that the petitioner's injury did not arise, quote, during and as a result of the performance of regular duties. So that was the reason that they said no. On appeal, the appellate division reversed, ruling that the petitioner's brief departure to retrieve feminine hygiene products from her car was the same kind of brief departure that an employee would take for a bathroom break. And the appellate division held that the board erred in categorically excluding injuries occurring in an employer's parking lot, as the location was only relevant where an employee was in the process of commuting to or from work. And in this case, the court noted that bathroom breaks were necessary part of an employee's performance and therefore within the course and scope of employment. So in other words, if someone is hurt while taking a bathroom break, that's going to be covered. Thus, because the petitioner's departure was akin to leaving duties for a bathroom break, the court ruled that the petitioner was within the course and scope of her duties when her injury occurred. So pretty serious injury, permanent disability, and she was entitled to permanent disability benefits. There's another case, Mattia versus Board of Police and Firemen Retirement System. That one, the petitioner appealed from a board decision finding the petitioner ineligible for accidental disability retirement benefits. Excuse me. Petitioner had been suffering or had suffered a disabling injury when he slipped and fell on ice in the parking lot of the jail where he worked as he reported for work. Now, the administrative law judge initially granted the petitioner's application, concluding that because he was required to be vigilant around the prison anytime he was present, his commute ended once his vehicle entered the prison grounds. Now, the board reversed the administrative law judge's findings, concluding that because petitioner had not yet begun his shift, he was still commuting when he was injured, and therefore was ineligible for accidental disability benefits. Now, in this case, the appellate division affirmed the board's decision, and the appellate division rejected the petitioner's assertion that his commute finished when he arrived in the parking lot and prepared to work by making his way to the prison entrance. In this case, the court agreed with the board that the petitioner had not completed his commute when he was injured, as he was not performing any function connected to his job. And the appellate division also rejected the administrative law judge's conclusion that the petitioner's job required pre-shift vigilance while walking through the parking lot. So accordingly, the appellate division ruled that the petitioner's injury was not causally connected to his work. Very significant. You can see the two differences, the two cases reported, the same day, actually. And this one, the appellate division said because the employee was at work, simply took a short break to go out to retrieve some personal items from her car because she had unexpectedly been told she had to also stay for a second shift, that this was part of her employment. So interesting if, in fact, she had left for the day, I think the would have been the same decision as in the Mattia case. So then there have been a number of other cases that are not approved for publication, which may or may not be interesting, but they're not precedent-setting. So let's come back after we take a short break for some of our other sponsors, and we really hope that you consider being a sponsor of our programs, and certainly that helps the chamber and helps us to understand that people are listening and enjoying the various programs, and there are so many programs. This is, as I said, It's the Law. Just trying to bring you up to date on some of the things that are happening, legally happening in New Jersey. Back in just a couple minutes.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental. ¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con...
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi again, Pat Smits. We're back. We'll have a few more minutes to, actually almost a half an hour, to figure out what else is happening in some of these cases. There's a tax case that might be of some interest to people. Obviously, people do have a right to appeal from their tax assessments. And this case was against the Borough of Wallington. And in this was a tax court decision. And Farmland Dairies versus Borough of Wallington. So apparently, Donald Knuckle moved to intervene in plaintiff's tax appeal challenging assessments on its property for tax years 2014 through 2016. Mr. Knuckle, who owned property in defendant Borough, claimed that he was discriminated against by the underassessment of the subject property. However, his motion was filed 2 years after the 2014 appeal and a year after the 2015 appeal and 13 days after the filing deadline for the 2016 appeal. So the court initially ruled that Mr. Knuckle's motion to intervene as of right was barred by the statute of limitations. So that's something that's always important to know. What is the statute of limitations? In other words, there's a time, a deadline, by which a person has to bring a suit if they're going to do it, so that these people can't wait for years and years and years and then come in and say, well, now I'm ready to proceed. So it's very important to find out what the statute of limitations is for any kind of potential case that you might think you have. So in this case, the appellate division affirmed the denial of intervention as of right, but remanded for the court to rule on Mr. Knuckle's alternative argument for permissive intervention. And I'm going to play a spot because I think there's going to be some noise here. So I'll be right back to talk more about
everybody
that.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, as I said, I was talking about the Borough of Wallington's tax court case, and the appellate division did rule that Mr. Nuchols was out of time, and so that he had no right to intervene, but he had an alternative argument for permissive intervention. So on remand, the court ruled that he was also not entitled to permissive intervention. And the court ruled that a claim could not be entertained even though intervention as of right or through permissive intervention once the applicable limitations period had expired. And the court noted that it could not relax the statute of limitations and held that to permit Nuchols' untimely intervention would offend principles of timely filing. The court further noted that the attempt to intervene solely constituted an affirmative claim, and the court held that he could not, the person intervening, Mr. Nuchols, the intervener, could not assert a defense in favor of the subject property's assessment since only a municipality had standing to defend its assessments. So that's another issue in court, whether someone who is trying to come into a case, whether they have standing to intervene. In other words, you can't just intervene in any case because you want to. And so that, but again, what's really important here is to understand the statute of limitations, because if you miss the deadline, you're likely to be out, and that's can be very, you know, cost a lot. We now have heard that our former governor is opening a law practice. Rather surprising. I guess I'm not involved in politics enough to know why he wouldn't have just joined one of the bigger firms in the state. That's what usually happens. So let's see. The New Jersey State Bar Association tax law section, is really talking about how the new statute is really going to impact on New Jersey. And so important, if you're interested in that, to find that information. There's also approved for publication, and again, this is an appellate division case, and it was New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency, DCPMP, formerly DIFAS, and in this case, it was against AD, using initials, and AD was the defendant, and AD appealed from the trial court's order finding he abused or neglected his 15-year-old stepdaughter by committing acts of sexual abuse. The division responded to police referral, and DCPMP would have had to, of course, they would have been mandated to respond to that. And it was a police referral reporting that the defendant had been arrested for sexually abusing his stepdaughter. And the stepdaughter alleged that her stepfather had assaulted her while they were on the way to get food. And at that point, the defendant confirmed that he had taken his stepdaughter to get food, but denied sexually assaulting her. The stepdaughter also alleged prior incidents of sexual abuse, which the defendant also denied. A physical examination concluded that the stepdaughter had been sexually assaulted. At a fact-finding hearing on DCP&P's charges, the trial court admitted the stepdaughter's physical examination report over the defendant's objection after reviewing division caseworkers' reports and the stepdaughter's medical and psychological records. The trial court concluded that the division had established by a preponderance of the evidence that defendant abused his stepdaughter by committing acts of sexual abuse. The trial court noted that the stepdaughter made consistent disclosures about the assault while the surrounding circumstances were corroborated by the stepfather. On appeal, the stepfather argued that the trial court erred in finding that his stepdaughter's allegations were corroborated and erred in relying on inadmissible evidence. So that's the question, is evidence. So the court first agreed, this is the appellate court, first agreed that the trial court erred in relying on the stepdaughter's, relying in full on the stepdaughter's medical and psychological reports to corroborate her allegations of assault because they contained what the court said was, quote, sufficiently complex and controversial, end quote, diagnoses that constituted an opinion on the critical issue. Again, this is, in this case, the judge had to make that decision. In other cases, a jury has to make the decision on the critical issue in the case. You can't let the expert make that decision. However, in this case, the appellate division held that factual observation in the reports did provide some admissible circumstantial evidence that in fact corroborated the stepdaughter's allegations, which when combined with the defendant's corroborating statements supported the trial court's finding. The court further found several prior incidents of abuse alleged were also corroborated by sufficient evidence. So that is always important. Is the evidence, can something be entered into evidence? And with an expert, I have to be very careful if, in fact, they're trying to give an opinion on the ultimate issue that must be decided by the court or by the jury, depending on whether it's a jury case or not. And, of course, cases, DCP&P cases, are not jury cases. They're handled by the family court in one of the various areas that the family court handles, which is, there are numerous. That's one of the reasons why the court's so overworked and overwhelmed. Okay, back in just a minute to kind of give you some final views on what's happening or what's happened this week in the cases. And let me tell you who else we're going to hear from, a couple of our sponsors.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi again. I'm just trying to think of what we may want to talk about or what I might want to talk about the last few minutes of the program. One of the things that did happen this month is that the New Jersey lawmakers gave final legislative approval to a measure that would bar anyone under the age of 18 from getting married in New Jersey. Not sure that that will really stop people. Many of them in the past, my understanding is people used to go to Maryland or other states to get married when it was harder to get married in New Jersey. Certainly a good idea to, there is concern when children under 18 are getting married. I understand that. I don't know if you can really have the same thing for everyone. But in any event, I'm not going to get into that. See what else might be happening. I haven't talked about some of the other cases that have been going on. You know, usually things are a little bit slower in the summer, and whether or not they're going to be approved for publication is another issue. There was a stockholder at Merck, might be of interest since this is a, Merck country, or certainly was until they, moved their beautiful facility or moved out of their beautiful facility. In this case, the plaintiff was a shareholder and owned stock in Merck and Company, and he appealed from the dismissal of his complaint. He had filed a complaint for inspection of corporate records, and he sought production of 12 broad categories of documents from Merck, and he sought evidence that the defendant acted wrongfully in rejecting his prior litigation demand, and that prior litigation demand, that was arising from Merck's acquisition of another pharmaceutical firm. In this case, Mr. Feuer, F-E-U-E-R, contended that the acquisition was reckless, given questions of the validity of the other company's patents, and that Merck failed to renegotiate the deal after some of the patents were invalidated. In response to that demand, Merck appointed a working group to evaluate the demand, retained counsel, and made a recommendation. So what happened is the working group ultimately recommended rejection of plaintiff's litigation demand. And then the plaintiff made the present records demand, and then at that point, Merck released minutes from the working group and board of directors, but otherwise denied the demand. So the plaintiff then filed the present complaint, and Merck moved to dismiss. The trial court granted the motion, meaning the motion to dismiss, ruling that the documents the plaintiff was looking for fell outside the scope of, and this was the quote, books and records of account, end quote, and that the common law did not expand the inspection right. So on appeal, the appellate division affirmed the dismissal of plaintiff's complaint, The appellate division agreed with the trial court that the plaintiff's demand exceeded the scope of, quote, books and records of account, end quote, permitted by statute, ruling that the scope did not encompass all records, books, and documents of a corporation. The appellate court further held that the common law did not expand the scope of inspection rights, and in any event, concluded that the bare-bones allegations made by the plaintiff would not trigger inspection rights under the old common law. And then the court also rejected plaintiff's reliance on an amendment to the inspection statute. And the court ruled that it allowed courts to limit rather than expand inspection rights. So plaintiff didn't make it on that one. So there's another criminal court, an appellate division, that is, a court consolidated two appeals concerning territorial jurisdiction in the context of the strict liability drug-induced death statute. So in this case, the first case, the trial court dismissed the charges against defendants, two New York residents who allegedly purchased heroin in New Jersey and distributed the heroin to an overdose victim in New York. So the allegation here is that the New Jersey courts had jurisdiction because the heroin was purchased in New Jersey. So the trial court found that the dealer's conduct fell within the scope of the statute because he sold heroin to defendants in New Jersey. And the state appealed from the dismissal of the charges against defendants, while the dealer cross-appealed the denial of his motion to dismiss. So on appeal, the state argued that the statutory element of distribution was not limited to the physical transfer, but also encompassed participation in the transaction viewed as a whole. As you can see, this is some real legal arguments from people who are trying to either not have jurisdiction in New Jersey or trying to keep a case in New Jersey. So the question was making whether or not if participation in the transaction as a whole, if that was the way it would be looked at, then venue would be proper in either jurisdiction, because it would be proper in the jurisdiction in which any act perpetrated in furtherance of a transfer or sale of drugs occurred. So alternatively, the state of New Jersey argued that the distribution element of the offense occurred in New Jersey, making New Jersey proper venue, even though the drugs were ingested and the resulting death occurred in New York. So the court rejected the state's argument and affirmed dismissal of the charges against defendants. The court noted that the transfer of heroin to the victim occurred in New York and further noted that the statute explicitly excluded possession with intent to distribute from its definition of distribution. So apparently, because of the definition, if someone has possession with intent to distribute, that is not in the definition of distribution. So then the court held that the result could have been different had the defendants and the dealer engaged in a conspiracy in New Jersey. So at this point, if there had been a conspiracy, probably dealing with the sale of the drugs in New Jersey, in any event, that evidence, so there was evidence, an element of the indicted crime took place in New Jersey, but the court held that the dealer, in this case, could argue to the jury that defendant's subsequent actions eliminated his criminality totally rather convoluted. So, but again, what should be important, certainly at this time of year and all year long, but certainly at this time of year, make sure your kids know that if one of their friends, you know, all these parties that are going on after graduation, if somebody gets sick from drinking too much or drugs, the kids can't leave that person alone. They have to call for help. They will not be prosecuted. It is a serious, serious concern, or should be, that kids are getting high and not realizing that they may be close to death. So there is, I think we're kind of at the end, or at least I'm kind of worn out today, and nothing really significant. I mean, these cases were significant to the parties, and of course, that split ruling to two former police officers seeking enhanced benefits after being involved in traumatic events on the job was significant. And by the way, in that case, the Supreme Court ruled the way it had to rule, but urged lawmakers to take a new look at the relevant statute and case law so that this can be better defined. In other words, the fact that somebody is on state property in a parking lot of a jail or correctional facility, should they be barred totally from these benefits? And I think many people would say, no, the fact she had or did not have. I'm kind of going off on a tangent there, so I'm not going to do that. We'll be back next week. I'm just going to play the news, and then we'll be back with the sports guys.
USA Radio News.
Today, the neighbor of Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who attacked him outside his home last year, was sentenced to 30 days in federal prison. The attack was over yard debris that Paul repeatedly stacked near the line between their two properties. Also today, a federal judge ordered Paul Manafort to await trial in jail after prosecutors charged him with witness tampering. The president was also asked about Manafort.
You know, Paul Manafort worked for me for a very short period of time. He worked for Ronald Reagan. He worked for Bob Dole. He worked for John McCain, or his firm did. He worked for me, what, for 49 days or something?
Tom Brady sat down for an interview with Oprah Winfrey, and it's a conversation that involves some topics that you don't usually get to hear Brady talk about.
I love having the, you know, to come home to someone that engages me every night, you know. She makes me laugh. Oh, my God.
You can catch that entire interview on Sunday on Oprah's network at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. This is USA Radio News.
GEICO presents unhelpful home improvement how-tos.
Nothing's worse than walking into your garage and realizing a thief has ridden off with your bike. So today, I'll teach you how to burglar-proof your home with a pudding-filled moat. All you need is a backhoe, a drawbridge, and thousands of gallons of butterscotch pudding. Now let's start digging.
You could try to protect your stuff with pudding, or you could get covered for personal property loss through the GEICO Insurance Agency. Call GEICO and see how affordable homeowners insurance can be.
Wayne Allen Root for Bullet Blocker. I love these guys. Sometimes you find a product and you go, wow, why didn't I think of that? Trained as an Army Ranger and former Deputy Sheriff, Joe Curran invented the world's first bulletproof backpack. Now Joe has built a successful Made in the USA company that offers bullet-resistant products for your most precious asset, your children. Backpacks, bulletproof clothing, vests, briefcase, and more. Bullet Blocker gives your kids the gift of life. Stylish clothing that protects like police body armor. Go to bulletblocker.com and enter code WARN to save 10%. That's bulletblocker.com, bulletblocker.com.
Walgreens is accused of contributing to the opioid crisis As USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports,
Kentucky is suing the pharmacy giant Walgreens over what state officials call a dual role in the opioid crisis. In the lawsuit, Kentucky's Attorney General Andy Beshear alleges that through its role as both a pharmacy and a distributor, Walgreens directly contributes to the state's drug epidemic. It's the sixth opioid-related lawsuit that AG Beshear has filed, and it's the latest in a wave of such lawsuits brought by state and local governments against the pharmaceutical industry as a result of the opioid epidemic.
Brigham and Women's Hospital is a teaching hospital of Harvard Medical University. Well, they're taking down a prominent display of their past medical legends because there are too many white men. 30 portraits are being removed because they reinforce that white men are in charge. That's according to one professor. The portraits are being removed so that the medical school can put the focus on diversity. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business...